Yeah, that's fine, yeah.
Hi, it's great to be back. I was here 2 years ago at the Obey. I was a guest reader back then, so it's nice to see people. I'm just going to read two poems and are fairly self-explanatory. This one's called Night Drive. As I set out from Waterford, the full moon is in the sky. The road curves suddenly, nearly turning in on itself. A carpet of near black with cat's eyes. My car lights flash against the window of a house, momentarily blinding me. The house looks abandoned, curtains stuck together. A moth hits the windscreen, splits open, blood oozes out. I spray it away. The moonlight silences the sea, a ring of copper around torn clouds. The town of York glitters against the bay as the water is sucked in by the mud. There is surprise in each corner. And yet the same darkness keeps with me, the same strip of white paint glowing. Finally, my mind is quiet. The road unfurls as it does, neither adding nor taking away. The digit clock moves up a number. Time seems to stand away. I arrive at my parents' house in Kilworth, deep in the hush well past midnight. A short one there. This one's called The Singing Hollow. Deep in the bowels of Dublin, there is St. Alban's Park. In the middle, there is a singing hollow, a slab of rock, upright and grey, with a hole carved into it. You are invited to place your head inside, clear your throat, purse your lips and hum. Vibrate until all your organs are in tune. The pulse matches the stone, waves spread out and meet the road. Blackbirds, apartments, all vibrate in concert beyond what the ears and eyes can tell, but the heart knows. Thank you. Ooh.
Thank you very, very much, David. Sue Blue is next.
I need you to help me make a choice. I have one poem which I only have in German. It's kind of a ballad type thing, and it's got a rhythm. And the other one is in English, and I want to test the waters with that one. It's an older poem of mine, with a kind of darker theme. So which one would I do?
Are you going to test us?
No, the ballad isn't a thing. It's not a song ballad. It's not.
Do the English one, sir. I'd love to hear you sing with
the wrong thing off. Thanks. Well, maybe I should make that into a song one day. No, you see, I haven't translated that yet. Okay, this one here, you might have heard me do it before ages ago, but I'd just like to test the waters for reactions, so I'm thinking of putting it to music at some point. The Unwanted Children. There once was an unwanted woman who met an unwanted man. Alone they had roamed through the darkness in search of compassion and care. It was spring and life was rejoicing, celebrating new light, and with anxious anticipation she conceived in a full moon night. They held each other with longing, but couldn't feel love in their hearts. Fearing the other's rejection, they both were bearing the dark. In doubt of the power of love, their souls closed up and grew cold. So the man abandoned the woman, and broken she walked on alone. Groping the depth of her sorrow, she dreaded the tender new life. Afraid of the weakness of love, she refused her full moon child. And when the cycle completed, the baby was born in the night. Grieving in pain of rejection, the woman neglected the child. There once was an unwanted mother who had an unwanted child. The child lives in fear of neglection, unwanting, still haunting its mind. Now there's a chain of rejection, scared of the heartache of life, bonding all unwanted children. Will it ever end in the light?
Thank you very much. So Cliff Wedgbury is next.
I'm going to take you back to 1962-63. I was 16 going on 17, and I had a sister 4 years older than me, and I said, "Molly, how do I get myself a girlfriend?" And she said, "Go dancing." I said, "But I can't dance." So she got her Buddy Holly records out, and she taught me to jive in the kitchen. And I said, "Where will I go?" She said, "Go to the 100 Club." I said, "Where's that?" So she said, "Well, when you're in the Strand, walk up Charing Cross Roads to Tottenham Court Road, turn left into Oxford Street, and it's just along there on the right-hand side, number 100 Oxford Street, 3 and 6 to get in the basement, and it's 7:30 till midnight." So this is what happened. And she said, "Behave yourself, no groping. Last train to Greenwich." When I was a young lad, I went to a dance at a jazz club in London to look for romance. The girl that I met there filled me with delight as we danced to the music where she held me tight. I bought her a mineral. She gave me a kiss. I never imagined love could be just like this. For when the night ended and we had to depart, her beautiful smile bore deep in my heart. The bright lights of London shone down on our joy, discovered in wonder by a girl and a boy. With the full moon above us, we walked hand in hand where the Charing Cross Road sweeps down to the Strand. She worked in a bookshop, filling shelves all day long. I worked in an office with a heart full of song. Sometimes we shared lunch with a pigeon or three, a cheese and ham roll while she perched on my knee. Nelson looked down from his home in the sky, above all the fountains where tourists pass by, Trafalgar Square in the warm summer sun, till St Martin's chimed 2, and we both had to run. She back to Foyles for the rest of the day, I back to Fleet Street filing papers away. In a world of our own, lost in a dear land, where the Charing Cross Road sweeps down to the Strand. We jive to Chris Barber and Acca Bilk songs, smooched with the music to where love belongs. His cool clarinet played Stranger on the Shore. And when the tune finished, we shouted for more. We drank frothy coffee in Old Compton Street. The two eyes would welcome two sweethearts complete, where skiffle would play and the saxophone blow. But the last train to Greenwich was waiting to go. So we'd run like two athletes on a 100-yard dash, laughing and shouting down the road in a flash. Sweethearts making music in our own joyful band, where the Charing Cross Road sweeps down to the Strand. Her mum and her dad had a flat near the pier. Our footsteps would linger as her front door drew near. We'd hug and we'd kiss with the moon on the tide, where the tugboats were moored all along the Thames side. We whispered goodnight as the shadows grew deep, hoping her parents would be fast asleep. But we were unlucky, for her dad shouted out, "Step lively, my girl, give that playboy a clout." So I quickly scarpered and went on my way, with a smile and a wave till the following day, when I'd see her once more as she held out her hand, where the Charing Cross Road sweeps down to the Strand. Yes, I'd see her once more and hold her warm hand, where the Charing Cross Road sweeps down to the Strand. The end.
That's the cutest poem I've ever heard in the swinging 60s in London. Mary O'Connell.
I think I'm okay, thanks, Ben. Yeah. It's a very simple little poem. It's just an observation. It's called One Man and His Dog. It is the dog that catches my attention, a wiry little thing, jumping up in adoration, her young companion looking straight ahead as they move down the street. The charge between them is electric, a nod enough to halt the frisky bundle as her owner strides into a shop. Alert, she circles round the pavement, eyes pierced through black and lemon wisps. The tilt of her head betrays a fine intelligence, ears cocked sniffing the terrain, she finally settles on the flagstones. A sharp bark when a burly individual erupts out of the shop. Then, as the awaited one returns, she springs into a joyful frenzy, windmill paws climbing the air. I watch with some regret as the pair disappear into the crowd.
Thank you, Mary. Charles is next.
Except that I think that the way doctors behave in courts, etc., is probably still quite relevant. And the way painters behave, there's still a few around capable of doing the things that I'm talking about. Witness summons are the angel in the courtroom. The professor made a fist as big as that, referring to the wound in the abdomen. His colleagues had already told a shot in the shoulder, screams in the night trauma, back of the court. I saw Jack Key, R.A., penciling quietly. I decree a huge sum, said the judge. Would cost, my lord? Costingly. The victim glanced to friends all over then. At the RAA, that is the Royal Academy, next year, my eye was held by an immense canvas. A female figure proffered a kerchief to the victim with a backward glance. Rendered with draperies in monochrome school grisaille, she was not out of place in the sea of faces, in the court with the judge and the victim, who is perhaps a hero and has forgotten the check waiting. The title, Red Letter Day, does not disappoint. Another red dot near the catalogue number.
Thank you, Charles and Patricia Walsh.
This is a poem about no one being indispensable. Building up lessons. Only the remnant shall be saved. Pocket in your favourite Bible distressed at how the world goes by, frigidly stretched, conspiring near no one helping situation. A fraud for not producing whatever goods may lie, borrowing a computer for a domination. Pleading not to do the deed, convenient trick, bearing the strangest of feats will lure. This own private galaxy, enough to bore, studied fragments remain still apart. Attention through ink is all they cannot report. Built in obsolescence, adolescence undercover stares. The bell makes the sudden departure are sweetly annoying. No mediation can touch you now, dangerous as is. Time and again excuse new gratification. Making friends with doorbells is a satanic touch. There is nothing there but sky and meaty application. Free education and food is the best of your efforts. Driving to freedom, whatever that comes from. Only driven home where it is needed. God is not inclined to make mistakes. Finding love on the repaired gratitude festival, too damn right. Some vitamin heart caught you unawares. Thunderously claiming what is proffered to be yours.
Thanks, Patricia. No, obviously we have the lads here from Coventry, and it is an exchange thing, so every year there's two Ovail regular contributors are given the distinct pleasure of being sent to Coventry. One of those this year is Benjamin Burns.
I'll just read one. This this one's about the Elysian, which is the tallest building in Cork, big glass building, and also the tallest building in Ireland, I think.
It's gorgeous.
And it's as you'll see, but it is kind of gorgeous. The Elysian in the hazy sun, post dawn, a hollow skull with a headset on, tuned in to poetry as vacuous and uplifting as a TED talk, given by some neuroscientist or other, who thinks he can disprove the reality of the reality we perceive, or who turns research on brain plasticity into an advertisement for self-empowerment, defacing with crude narrative this perfect contemporary ghost ship, approaching the shores of another consciousness, mirror neurons firing. I'll do one there. In Deckwells on George's Street, I traded my body for a bucket of paint because I had no money, and paint doesn't want for things or get hungry. They were out of red, so I opted for crimson and rolled out of the shop, avoiding collision with pedestrian and pigeon. I hadn't a notion in my head, because I hadn't a head, and the notions I had were not notions, but crimson, liquid, dead. Well, I rolled to the offie, and the lad at the counter must have felt sorry for a solitary bucket bumping despondently against a crate of Carpaccy and not a penny on him. So he opened a bottle of the finest gin, picked me up gently, cranked off my lid and poured the spirit in. Oh, sweet goodness, I burst a crimson grin, left the poor lad's face a sunset of sin and sticky. Drunk as a bucket, I leapt from his grasp like a poisonous frog, legless but no longer aware of it, the rainforest beckoning. As lidless I rolled, my contents spilt out, covering pigeons and pavements and shoes and bins and cars and guards and buildings and bridges with the gloopy primordial liquid, till town was coated in drunken paint. But nobody noticed, because by then it was 3 on a Saturday night.
I think they go quite well together because the second one probably is something like the planning process that went into the releasing of the goal.
Yes.
Excellent stuff. Amy is next.
Pollution. With a single wing beat, I had forgotten how to speak, had forgotten language. My voice was shattered plastic bottles floating on the surface of an ocean, and the ocean was my mind. Fragmented plastic words covering a sea with nonsense. Why were they there? Who polluted my world? I did. I had spoken those words. I did. Now all of them were chaos, meaningless rubbish I had spilled, thinking I could get rid of them by throwing them away. I was mistaken. There is no way. Everything must stay. So I jumped into the pool and swam in my trash, knowing nothing but silence, holding on to pieces of plastic, and by chance, 3 of them got stuck on my lips. My language had only 3 words. The only words I know were, I love you. The waters were deep, where there was nothing to hold on but debris of gibberish, and I was drowning. Worded waste washed over me, pushing me under as the air escaped my lungs, and I opened my mouth to scream. 3 more scraps of plastic got stuck to my tongue, and the only words I know were, I need to grow. I screamed those words into the wasteland until my voice was low and their meaning was true. Then I gathered all the drifting words from my salty ocean, and I told you, I love you, I have to grow, I have to go, so I can speak again.
Thank you, Emma. Next up is a man who threatened to win the 5-word challenge tonight but didn't quite get the grab.
He was sad, so was she. Miserable misery. Both blamed both. Both blamed the other. So they went taking separate lovers. Honeymoon happy, honeymoon glad, soon gave way to rebound sad. Both looked back, both were blue. What to say and what to do? The rebound rebounds, it's on again, reconnecting with the babe. Both want both want the other, to live a big life and grow old together.
Who said Scottish men weren't romantic? Complete and utter fallacy that statement. Thanks, Rab. So next up is the woman who stopped Rab from winning the 5-word challenge. And she's also the second part of the Visiting Poets to Coventry in November, Shauna Lee.
Catherine Maher is the poet at the Cork Poetry Festival, gave an intro to one of her poems, and she was saying that she puts all of her ugly things into poetry, and I thought that was really cool, because most of the time you're trying to make it like nice and, you know, like flowers and skies or whatever, and I wanted to write a sad poem, but if I was an artist I would have made a very ugly painting, so this is inspired by that. It's called I'm Fine Really. Smudge brown paint on a magnolia canvas. Rub in cigarette tar from the ashtray on the mantel. Light a candle, the one you bought together at the market. Cedarwood and lemongrass. Pour the wax onto the portrait. Meet it with your fingerprints. Carve a face with your nails. Give her tears. From the rubbish bin, collect up remains of prawn shells, onion skins and coffee grinds. Throw them all upon it. Frame it with the chewed gum, grocery receipts and ticket stubs rotting from the bottom of your handbag. To deflect from any personal revelation, call the piece climate change or something equally broad. So trendy people in brightly coloured power suits can eat cambray and avocado canapes and revere at its relevance before taking cocaine in the bathroom. Someday you might wish to join them, but for now, just lie there. Ties on coal tile and wait to see if someone will come to take it off your hands.
Apparently that's an ugly poem.
But if it was a painting.
My definition of ugly must be different. I read one of my own. I'm very frustrated with the world at the moment. And this is one I wrote a while back, but anyway, sure, I think it's self-explanatory. It's called Tell Me That It Isn't True. Sitting on top of the world, masked and anonymous masters of war are talking paths of victory and World War III. Night after night, like a neighbourhood bully afflicted with a disease of conceit, masked and anonymous see a world gone wrong as a license to kill. Sitting on a barbed wire fence, Jim and Joey Jones ain't talking World War III or paths of victory. Night after night, these two soldiers desire shelter from the storm, dream about faraway summer days in the heartland, standing in the doorway of Maggie's farm. Night after night, these two soldiers are thinking maybe someday, the man on the street, always only a pawn in their game, will see a changing of the guard. Sitting on top of the world, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, are pressing on with paths of victory, World War III, and a world gone wrong being a license to kill.
So
the 620th edition of the OVA, which is our Twin City annual event, comes to a close. Let's give the bow and a round of applause. I always wonder, they select the bar staff up here as people who love poetry, or they're just sitting there being fucking further punished from being at work by having to listen to poetry that they despise. Don't answer that question. Thank you all for being here. Thanks for your contributions. And just before we close, after this we go to Mames for a drink. If you want to join us, you're more than welcome. And I'm sure there'll be a few over there. There usually is. And we have one final round of applause for our guest poets from Coventry. Great. And if we don't see you in Mames, hopefully we'll see you right here next week for edition 621. Good night.